Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, a weekly program discussing issues of concern to the family and those who hold traditional family values in Pennsylvania and our nation. Archives of these programs can be heard at www.afafpa.org. And now, your host, Diane Gramley, State Director of American Family Association of Pennsylvania.
I believe in the past 3 years, more Americans have come to realize that their health is being monitored by the U.S. government, and many are wondering how this happened. This has been going on for a long time, and both parties have facilitated the transformation. It did not begin with Obamacare, as I always assumed, until I read the book Big Brother in the Exam Room, The Dangerous Truth About Electronic Health Records. My guest today is the author of that book, Twyla Brace. She's a registered nurse and a public health nurse. Thanks, Twyla, for being with us.
Thanks so much.
I'm assuming PHN does stand for public health nurse, right? That's what you have on the...
It does.
Okay.
Okay,
that was a good guess on my part. As I said in the intro, I had always blamed Obamacare because it seemed to happen, what was 2009 in his first term, but that was just one more step in the really decades-long progress. When did this all begin, the effort to basically take away the physician-patient confidentiality? To me, I always thought that was something we had, but it's obviously not the case. When did it all begin?
Well, it really began in the early 90s, and then it was a group of government and corporations, and it was called the Work Group for Electronic Data Interchange, and they got together to try to figure out how they could move towards digitizing all data. And then in 1996, well, actually, I should say that back in 1993, when the Clinton Health Security Act was written, that also had a provision in there for moving toward electronic data, electronic medical records, digitized data of all health information. And then in 1996, a bill called the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, called HIPAA, was passed, and that was a bipartisan bill, mostly bipartisan. Well, I think passed, you know, in the Congress mostly because that bill also had medical savings accounts in it, and so I think that's what they were looking at to really make happen. But the fact of the matter is there was a provision in there that really moved the entire country towards digital medical records.
And that was in 96.
So that happened in 1996. Okay. Mm-hmm. Correct.
And so many times, you know, they were probably trying to get the health savings accounts in there, you said. But many, 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 many times, congressmen do not read the entire bill before they vote on it. And I'm afraid that that may well have happened back in 1996, even as it happens today. Go ahead.
I was going to say, if I believed that it was, you know, that a lot of members of Congress didn't want it, that would be one thing. But all the health plans wanted it, the hospitals wanted it, the government wanted it. And so when you have all those very big players, pharma wanted it, you know, I think there are a lot of members of Congress that probably looked at some of their biggest donors and campaign funders, and they were probably all for it. Some of them even within the healthcare industry themselves who were within Congress, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think that they necessarily were opposed to it.
Oh, so it traces back or points back to money, to those campaign donors. And that's so frustrating to me, as I know it is to you, that too many politicians look at their donors and do what their big donors and do what their big donors want, even though it's not in the best interest of their constituents or in the best interest of the entire United States. That's a sad commentary as to the integrity of these elected officials. Very sad.
Well, I think it does say something about they do take an oath of office.
Yep.
And they are beholden to their constituents, but more than anything, they're beholden to their oath of office.
Right.
I think that's what oftentimes they are not looking at.
Yeah. That's why we are mailing all of 17 of Pennsylvania's congressmen copies of the U.S. Constitution and ask that they read it, because I believe that the majority of them have not read the U.S. Constitution. And it's a simple document, but I mean, take the time to read what it says. So we have in 96, we have HIPAA. I know I've interviewed you in the past about HIPAA. How did HIPAA, and you know, we're still being told in the doctor's office that it's privacy. Here, sign this HIPAA release because it's all about your privacy. But that P in HIPAA does not stand for privacy. How did the HIPAA, what is HIPAA exactly, and how is it so really created a divide between the physician and their patient because of the government interference there?
Yeah, so HIPAA, you know, Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act really has to do with the portability of insurance. But they added this provision, this really huge provision in the bill that has to do with the permissibility of sharing of private confidential medical records without consent. So the P stands for portability of health insurance. A lot of people think it stands for privacy, but it doesn't. And when that law was passed in 1996, Congress understood that when they digitized all the medical data, they would have to write a law that would protect the privacy, the medical privacy of patients. But I don't really think they ever intended to. They said they had to write it within 3 years, but then if they didn't write it, then the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services was required to write a rule, a so-called privacy rule. So they wrote that rule, and they published it in 1999, and there were some modifications of it. And eventually, in April 2003, so we're at the 20-year anniversary now, this April of 2023, of HIPAA, of the rule. And what the rule did was it took away patient consent. Secretary Shalala, head of HHS at that time under President Clinton, said that there was an age-old right to privacy, but that needed to change so that data could be used for certain publicly useful purposes. And with that, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services essentially struck any kind of consent requirements over the sharing of data, made it available for 12 national priority purposes, which are very, very broad, including some law enforcement, including healthcare oversight of the entire healthcare industry, including public health activities, including organ procurement of, you know, for donation, that sort of thing. All of that, plus they made it available to be shared with your name, your address, et cetera. This is all that kind of sharing. It's all individually identifiable information, made it available for sharing for healthcare operations, which is a huge thing because it's the definition of healthcare operations is actually almost 400 words long, and it's really a list of 65 business activities, non-clinical, nothing to do with your care, business activities. Amongst other things that they made it available for without your consent. So this is what the regulators did. And so they took away your consent. Congress, who was supposed to write a real privacy law, didn't. I think they didn't want to write one. They didn't want to be responsible for what would happen. And they were perfectly happy for HHS to write a rule that took away your privacy rights, took away consent requirements, and made this data available. Hither and yon to all of their biggest donors, the health plans, the research industry, pharma. And the thing about HIPAA that's interesting is it's a permissive data sharing rule, but it doesn't require your data to be shared except in two instances. So those that hold your data, the ones you expect that would have your data, right? The doctors, the hospitals, the laboratories, the x-ray facilities, nursing homes, et cetera. There's only two required shares or disclosures of your data. One of them is the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, if the regulators want to come and see if you're complying with the HIPAA rule. And then the second one is to you. They have to share your data. But even there's some caveats where they can say, no, we're not going to give you access. But those are the only two times that they have to share your data. But almost everything else is permissible so that they can share your data without your consent to all of these different business entities, to other doctors, other clinics, other pharmaceuticals. Walmart can share your prescription data to your doctor without your consent. So whatever you've been prescribed through the electronic health record system, that can all be looked at without your consent. Those sorts of things, they can have contracts with each other and share the data and you don't have anything to say about it. Now, HIPAA does say that you can ask, you can request that there be limits on the data sharing, but HIPAA also says they do not have to agree to your request. So you, the patient, are really not in control of what happens.
So when you sign that HIPAA, if you sign that HIPAA form, it doesn't matter. Really, it doesn't matter whether you sign it or not. They can do whatever they want to with your data. Is that what you're saying?
That is correct. However, we do encourage people not to sign the HIPAA form. And now, on this, I should be really clear. There's really about five versions of this so-called HIPAA form.
Oh.
There is an actual form that the only thing that's on there is a statement something like, I acknowledge that I have read or received or understood the notice of privacy practices. And that's all that's on the form. And then they ask you to sign it with a signature line. That's one version. That's the original version. But most clinics and hospitals don't have that anymore. Instead, within their consent to treatment, the consent to be billed form, they have the statement embedded. That very same statement, I acknowledge that I have received, read, or understood the notice of privacy practices, is embedded into this consent form. And when you sign the consent to be treated, you sign for everything else above it, and that's usually in there. Now, some clinics will actually give you the notice of privacy practices and ask you to sign the notice itself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that notice is really a notice of disclosure practices, all the ways that they're going to share your data without your consent. And some, not very many do it, but some do. The other two ways are electronic. One, they give you a tablet, and you're filling out all this information about yourself before you go into the exam room.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to this one where you acknowledge the notice of privacy practices, and they don't let you go forward on that electronic pad unless you have acknowledged it. In that case, I just encourage people to take it to the desk and say, I'm not willing to answer that one, so help me out here so I can, you know, finish everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And then the final one is they just give you this little pad when you come in, you know, like at the pharmacy, and you're just supposed to sign it, and they say it's a HIPAA form. But all it is a pad for your signature. You can't see anything behind it, in which case I ask people to ask for the form so they can, because nobody should sign something and
absolutely.
You have no idea what you're doing.
Yeah. That's like signing a contract and not knowing what it says.
Right, and then we just encourage you not to sign it because by law you don't have to. Nothing requires you to sign it. They are required to ask you to sign it, but this is all part of the deception to get you to think that you have some privacy rights.
Right.
When all you're saying is that you understand, you've read, you've received the notice of privacy practices, and now you understand that you have no privacy rights. So that's that's what that notice says.
How about some, because there was a situation here locally, how about some pharmacies, because there were some who wanted to move their prescriptions from like Rite Aid and such, who are now, you know, making available the abortion pill. They were going to, the pharmacy, it's a locally owned family pharmacy, a local family owns it, and they were going to require this person to sign the HIPAA form. And the person, you know, listens to you and is on your website, but and she didn't want to. So are pharmacies required to have new customers sign, or at least are they required to have them sign a HIPAA release, HIPAA form?
They are required to make the request.
Okay,
the rule says that they must make a, quote, good faith effort, end quote, get you to sign that. But I know people that do not sign the form at the pharmacy. They just refuse, and the pharmacy just, you know, goes beyond it. So,
yeah. Yeah, that's
what their attorneys tell them is that they could potentially have a very expensive HIPAA violation, but that is not true.
Wow.
The attorneys are saying something that's not true because there's no law that requires you to sign it. And there's no reason that you should help to propagate the myth that this has anything to do with protecting your information.
So no law requires anyone to sign the HIPAA form. That's good information. Here in your book, again, that's entitled Big Brother in the Exam Room, I'll be truthful, I've not read the whole thing, and I didn't understand, and you encourage folks to go with the, you recommend certain chapters for those who don't want to go through the whole book. But here on, oh, I just lost page, here on page, you're talking about Real ID, and I didn't realize that, but I can't find it now. Real ID, page 319, says, these are suggestions, you have numerous suggestions for legislators, but one of them is to repeal Real ID, disassemble the National Identity Registry, and repeal the language that allows the Secretary of Homeland Security to unilaterally expand the official purposes for which Real ID is required, for example, to healthcare. So Real ID which at this point, Pennsylvania is not part of it. I mean, legislators, conservative legislators fought it. It was finally approved under a Democratic governor and legislator and governor. And we're still, I think we have till next year to officially get the real ID, driver's license or not, whatever. But this is saying that the Secretary of Homeland Security can unilaterally expand the official purposes and possibly expand it into health care.
Correct.
Oh, my goodness.
So to be very clear, the Secretary of Homeland Security is having a hard time because this is an unfunded mandate.
Uh-huh.
And so they keep extending when this real ID is supposed to be a requirement across the country. So 2025, I think it's May of 2025, is the next date. They really almost extended it 2.5 years because there's a lot of states that can't really afford it. And then there's a lot of people choosing not to get it.
Yeah, I'm not getting
it. You an option.
Absolutely.
So if you have an option, don't get it.
Yeah.
The Real ID law, the federal Real ID law, says the Secretary of Homeland Security that the Real ID can be used for or is required for nuclear facilities, federal buildings, and commercial air travel,
right,
and any other official purposes. And the Secretary can unilaterally make that decision. And what would be the most obvious next purpose? Healthcare, because Medicare, Medicaid, the military, everything. It would be a really obvious next one because they're so involved in healthcare.
That
would become a unique patient ID, essentially a trackable number, for everybody to need this, as in no card, no care. And so states, Pennsylvania really fought a lot. I have the letter from legislators on our special Real ID page where they said this is a usurpation of state power.
Yeah.
And that's true. And a new roster of legislators could simply repeal the law in Pennsylvania and refuse, just like they did back in 2007, 2008, 2009. Mm-hmm. Real ID was passed in 2005, and almost every legislature in the country said, no way. That's against states' rights. You're not going to take over our identification and driving statutes in this state.
Yeah.
That's what they should do.
Unfortunately, now we have Democrats in control of the House and a Democrat in the governor's mansion, so I don't see that happening because that's unfortunately expansion of government seems to be part of the new Democratic platform is government expansion, and Real ID is definitely that. But I would say in the last 3 years, Americans have awakened to the close connection, I'll put it like that, close connection between pharmaceutical companies and healthcare. How pharmaceutical companies are basically running our healthcare, and of course they're making big bucks when it comes to COVID and the COVID vaccine and the COVID whatever else, the whole pandemic thing. Americans waking up, but Americans don't fully understand how we got here and how we can get out of it. I know the end of your book you have tons of end notes, fantastic end notes and such as that. And you have recommendations for Congress and state legislatures and citizens to rein this back in. And those are very, very helpful recommendations. I think there are many, many Americans who are just frustrated. One other thing you had in the book was many doctors have you go into a platform, to get your medical the results of your medical test and such as that. Is that what that's called?
Are you talking about the portal?
Yeah, portal. I knew it was a P word. Into the portal. Now, what is your recommendation on that? Can patients get around? And I'm not even sure how it works. I don't know if they create the portal. I know doctors want them to go to a portal to check out their test results. What's your recommendation on that?
So individuals, patients, Americans need to realize that the whole portal, the move to get you into a portal, is because it's one of the quality metrics and one of the things that doctors get paid more for or they get penalized for, according to how many of their patients are using the portal. So the government is driving everything online where it is trackable and accessible. And they're moving away from paper. Like how many of your listeners now have walked out of a doctor's office or an emergency room and not received discharge instructions? This was normal, that you would go home with discharge instructions in hand.
Mm-hmm.
It's not happening very much at all now, leaving patients to either get online, maybe they don't want to get online, maybe they don't have a computer.
Exactly.
Maybe they have to go to the library, right?
Mm-hmm.
In order to find out how they're supposed to care for themselves afterwards. This is actually wrong. There should be paper instructions put in a patient's hand.
Yeah.
In a patient's hand. But they really want you to go online. They want to know that you've gone online, because that's trackable. They want you to start adding more information from your life online. And they're building these profiles. And one of the ways to do this is through getting everybody to go onto the portal. You know, it is a convenience for you to find out your lab results, et cetera, but you also aren't going to get as much time with the doctor because they're going to say, just find it on the portal. Mm-hmm, we're not going to call you.
Yeah.
Well, how bad is that?
Exactly.
They should be calling you. Why are you being forced to figure out the interpretation of things by going to the portal?
Right, right. Are doctors penalized if they don't sign on or don't start using the electronic health record? Are they penalized?
They are penalized if they have Medicare patients.
Okay.
And they're also penalized by the health plans who are doing lots of the things through electronic health records. And they'll have it in the contract that you have to do X, Y, and Z in order to get paid or in order to get paid timely or, you know, that sort of thing. So there's a variety of ways they're penalized. But for Medicare patients, if a doctor does not have an electronic health record, they get less for every Medicare patient that they see. However, for some doctors, they said, fine, we're not going to pay the very expensive cost of having an electronic health record. We're not going to let you into our clinic by remote getting into our data through the electronic system. We're going to stay with paper records.
How can folks find a list of doctors who have not drunk the Kool-Aid, so to speak, and don't use electronic health records?
So we have the Wedge of Health Freedom, which is our online national directory of cash-based doctors. And some of them will have electronic health records, but they won't have it hooked up, hooked up to the e-health exchange, that sort of thing. And so they can go to jointhewedge.com. And then there's a little button that says, locate a practice. And so they can find practices all over the country. We keep adding practices every week to this website, to this directory.
Okay, fantastic.
Jointhewedge.com.
Okay. More than likely, it definitely keeps patients' information private, as most patients think their information's private. When their information's being sold to whoever or given to whoever, that could explain some of the junk mail we get and could explain some of the robocalls we get when it comes to health, health products and such. People don't connect the dots when it comes to their lack of privacy when it comes to their health care. And it's tragic that that's the case. How can folks get your book? Again, the book is Big Brother in the Exam Room. How can folks get that?
So they could go to bigbrotherintheexamroom.com and just take a look at it, but they can go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble or any place online where books are sold. They can find it. Big Brother in the Exam Room, the Dangerous Truth About Electronic Health Records.
Okay. Yeah. And jointhewedge.com is how folks can find a doctor that's not connected to I'll call it the matrix, the government matrix.
And a doctor that doesn't take government or insurance, so a doctor that works just for them at an affordable price.
Okay, great, great. And what's your website? What's your all's website? That's the Citizens Council on Health Freedom.
Citizens Council for Health Freedom, and it is cchfreedom.org.
CCHfreedom.org. Okay, CCHfreedom.org and jointhewedge.com if you're looking for a doctor, and bigbrotherintheexamroom.com to get the book or Amazon.
Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. I'm glad we finally connected. We had a lot of hiccups here, but we finally connected. I really appreciate your work, because I am so frustrated with the medical. It's an institution. Basically, it's become a medical. The medical institution has become part of the government. Too many cases. And I'm very frustrated with it all because there's a lack of care, real care, and doctors' hands are tied in almost every case. And it's very frustrating for not only me, but for the majority of Americans. So I really appreciate your all's work.
Well, thank you so much.
Okay.
I appreciate you talking about the book.
Okay. Hey, you take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
You have been listening to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. If you would like to get involved in the efforts to defend traditional values in Pennsylvania, please contact the AFAFPA by writing to Post Office Box 1048, Franklin, Pennsylvania, 16323, or by visiting their website at www.afafpa.org.